won't you? Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
I never do this, but I was just listening to the promos before the show, and I was listening to Ira Glass doing This America's Thing for This American Life, and it reminded me, that is, in my judgment, one guy's opinion, the finest radio that perhaps has ever occurred on radio. There is no hype, there's no substance, he may hesitate, he may whatever, he speaks in a natural voice, but the storytelling, the under-the-radar things like animal sacrifices, who would have thought about that? If you are not a fan, or it's been a long time since you've listened to This American Life, I do commend it to you. It has nothing to do with this show. Nobody's paying me to do this. Nothing KLW. It's not on their list of things to promo. It's simply an honest statement from me to you. So, for what it's worth. In any case, I use the word you, me to you. Well, this show today is all about you. Last week we had a half the show was kind of high-minded. It was about redistribution. I had two brilliant guys, one from Harvard, one from Berkeley, debated, and it was very good at one level. But I also, well, I'm aware that for many folks, that 30,000-foot level is just too far removed from real life and their real life problems. And so I decided I was going to devote all of today's show to you and your real life problems and or those of someone you love. So I have plenty of tips here that I will use, in between calls. But if you or someone you love has a career conundrum, and even the word conundrum feels a little abstract and intellectualized, if your work life sucks, that's my technical term for it, or could simply use improvement at whatever station in life you live, whether it be your entry level, your CEO, for-profit, non-profit, 16 or 76, if you've got a career problem, my mission in life is to try to help you solve them. And here at KALW, I do that for free for you. I call them a three-minute workover. So if you would like to call, this is a great time to call before the lines fill and you got to wait on hold for a while. So the phone number here at KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for the calls to come in, I have lots of people have been liking these under-the-radar careers that I've been focusing on. And I want to kick off that list today with one that I have mentioned a number of times, but the longer I mull the pros and cons of various careers, the more I am convinced that this career really, not for everybody, there's no one career for everybody, but this career really deserves a place at the very top. So I am going to, at the risk of repeating something I have said in the past, optometrist. Yes, it is a 4-year program after a bachelor's degree. If you're just starting college, there's 7-year programs that give you both a bachelor's and a optometry degree. But it is a fabulous career. It is fabulous because not only do you make 6 figures income, but the beauty of it is that you are helping nearly every patient. Unlike so many fields where it's just really hard necessarily to help everybody, almost everybody who comes into an optometrist office comes in with a problem, they don't see so well, and they come out seeing better. Or they've got some disease, they've got incipient cataracts, they call them kitty cats if you're just starting out. You're going to get help. Those things are all addressable, not all, but most. And there are very few night and emergency glaucoma surgeries. So, and by the way, optometrists are not allowed to do major surgeries, but they're increasingly allowed to do ever more, just as we're seeing because of so many, ever more people are needing health care coverage. We're extending downward what people can do. So it used to be only ophthalmologists could do any surgery or prescribe drugs. Now optometrists can do ever more of that. So you've got a big toolkit to work from. You're curing lots of people. It's a pleasant environment, regular hours, 6-figure income, and prestige. I'm not a big fan of shooting for prestige because I see too many unhappy lawyers and unhappy executives despite their prestige. But you even get that without a lot of the negative side effects. And the aging boomers, and their vision starts to fade, that's good business for you. So at the very top of my kind of slightly, that's not super under the radar, but slightly under the radar list of careers, optometrist is certainly first. We've got calls on the line. So let me give out the phone number again. I'll go to the calls right away, and then I'll give you some more of these cool careers, if you will. Phone number here. If you or someone you love could like you some career help, the price is right. Zero, zippo, nada. The phone number here. Work with Marty Nemko for a three-minute workover. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. It is your turn on the air. Hello. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I am well. How can I help?
Well, I recently took a step down in title to associate manager for my position, and I got into, it's a big, huge company, so that's why I did it. But when I came in, essentially, it's just a really negative work environment. The managers are very bullying, and it's just not as, it's not creative at all. So I'm trying to decide if staying in this huge company for at least a year on my resume at a lower title is worth, more worth just leaving now and continuing on my path. Is it really worth it to get this large company on my resume?
I would take a hybrid approach. I would first try to quietly under the QT, see if I could build. In a large company, the beauty of a large company is it isn't one company. There's dozens of corporate cultures. And it's a matter of, you know, every different boss creates his or her own culture. So I would see if I could find some way to make a lateral transfer, a face saving, you know, you don't want to make your boss look bad. That's corporate America. It's actually nonprofit America too. But see if you could wangle your way into some kind of a transfer into some other entity within the large company that might have a more felicitous subculture. And also, you talked about the lack of creativity. Very often people, and maybe you've already done this, but very often people take the job description as written. They're giving it to them, etc. But very often there is more flexibility than you may realize. So if you were to put on right now, I'm going to do it together. If you were right now to put on your creativity thinking cap and you were to think about a project that you could do that would be more creative, or one of your existing projects that you could do in a more edgy, creative way, can you think of anything? What is it?
In the job?
Yeah.
There's a couple of different, about going after different customers differently. It's about customer relationships and marketing that I'm in. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of jobs that I could do for that. I mean, I'm working on the projects now, but what tends to happen is I come up with the ideas and they basically either take them as their own and then give them to someone else to do the project because I'm a lower title. Or they just shut it down before I can get the idea out.
Okay. Let's look at both of those cases. If they are taking the idea and getting credit for it, first of all, I hate it and it's wrong, but if it's immutable, if there's nothing you can do about it, then you've got to learn to take pride in the fact that it was yours, and someday you're going to be the boss, and you'll be fairer about it. But just feel good about having had your idea stolen. There's something flattering about that. But you can also try to address the problem by presenting a draft of the idea. Let's say you think you've got a really cool idea, whether it be at a staff meeting or whether if there's just somebody other than your boss there, you bring it up for, quote, feedback. And you could do it, by the way, in an email. You say, I just came up with this idea that I think is pretty good, but I don't know. What do you guys think? That way everybody knows it's your idea. So you can... I'm sorry, what?
Right, that's a good idea.
Okay, so you do those kind of things, to try to make the most of your current job and or get a lateral transfer, because it is cool to work for, we live in a designer label society, which I think makes me puke, but it is the reality, and I don't think it makes me puke, it does make me puke. We just genuflect before the word Mercedes, even though they break down more and need more maintenance than a Toyota. But people have this prestige thing, which is crazy. We genuflect before Harvard and Berkeley, even though those are research universities and the quality of education provided to undergraduates or any kind of practical training is terrible. So I understand that you're working for HP or you're working for Amazon or you're working for Google or whatever, and that people are going to have orgasms over that. It does, and we have to honor that. That's just the human condition for whatever reason. But it doesn't mean that while you're simultaneously trying to make the most of this job in the way we've just outlined, that you do quietly, or maybe not so quietly if the boss doesn't give a crap whether you leave, you at least let your network know you don't want to complain. Unfortunately, again, in America, we're not allowed to complain about our current workplace, but you can say that you're feeling like you're getting a little less responsibility than you hoped, and you would love to get a job that has more creativity, perhaps a more collaborative work environment, without calling them bullies. And then, you know, maybe something else will come up. So at minimum, putting those feelers out will give you hope that at the end of the year, if you make it a year, there is going to be something better on the other end. So that's the hybrid solution I would suggest. What's your reaction to that?
I think that's great. I've been trying to do some networking that way. I'll continue to do that. I think you're right, and I'm facing that too. Unfortunately, people love the name.
I understand.
But there is value. I guess what I'm hearing is that there is value in staying for the name, but trying to make it work for myself.
Yeah, but also, you know, you can also turn that around. You can even be, you know, the one thing that is missing too often in the whole world of job searching is honesty. So if you go to your network and you say, you know, I love, you know, of course everybody likes the word Google and or whatever it is, you know, and but I don't want to let the sizzle take priority over the steak. So because I am given this, I am wedged into this corner where I'm not able to really flower, I'm willing to give up the prestige of a name in favor of being able to be more useful. That's the way you can even get more credit for being willing to give up the brand name. You still, the fact that you are hired by, you know, whatever, Amazon, suggests that you're a very high quality person, and you can milk that for all it's worth even if you've only been there a week. It's like, if I told you that I got into Harvard and I turned it down, or I showed up for a week and I said, my God, these classes are theoretical, abstract, boring, the professors don't give a crap about me, so I dropped out, aren't you going to have a lot of respect for the fact that I both was able to get into Harvard and I had the guts to quit and not let the sizzle dominate the steak?
Yeah, good point.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be the honest response. That's exactly how I feel about what you're doing, what you can impact the company. So that was me.
All right. Well, very good. Thanks a lot for the call. I wish you the best of luck.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Again, like this is a person who is kind of in the middle of the status hierarchy, if you will. Fancy company, small role. I don't care what your role is, whether it's a tiny role in a little company, tiny role in a big company, a huge role in a nonprofit or government agency. My mission in life and here on this show is to do what I call 3-minute workovers to help you with whatever career conundrum you are facing or someone you love. The phone number here for a 3-minute workover, 415-841-4134. That's the number here at Work with Marty Nemco, KALW, 415-841-4134. And as I've said, that I'm going to kind of pepper the show, interspersing my favorite kind of under-the-radar-ish careers in between your calls. And the next one I want to talk about, everybody knows that being a physician is obviously not under the radar, but there are niches within physician in almost any field that are under the radar and are unusually rewarding. And the one I want to focus on today is infectious diseases. Because we have so many immigrants, there is tremendous mobility from different parts of the world here, and there are different diseases that are in those countries, including some old American diseases that had previously been wiped out, like tuberculosis, are pretty much wiped out, that there are physicians who specialize in both clinical practice in infectious diseases and in public health, trying to turn maybe a half a dozen incidents of Chagas, which is an infectious disease in Mexico that's coming here slowly, from turning into an epidemic. So if you thought about being a physician or even a nurse or a physician's assistant, focusing on an under-the-radar niche that is synergistic with the trends in America, which, of course, is to more immigration, which, again, by the way, you know, it's Obama was not able to get it done, but I would bet anything, whether it be this year or next year or when Hillary Clinton gets elected next president, I absolutely believe if her health holds up, she will be the president. By the way, did you notice she got a facelift? She was looking terrible a couple of years ago, really bad. And then all of a sudden, she was like out of sight for a few months. And then all of a sudden, she looked young and perky and wonderful. I'm hoping her health is good. And in any case, so the point is, immigration is certainly a high priority among the Democrats. And so whether Obama's able to get it done or Hillary Clinton will, there will be far more legal immigrants here. And, of course, that will then send signals worldwide that we are welcoming of immigrants, legal or not. So the point is that in a field like infectious diseases, where there is the transglobality of it, tends to to create more work for infectious disease docs and infectious disease researchers and PhDs. That's a niche that I'd like you to consider. I'd also like you to consider giving me a call right now here at KELW if you would like a three-minute workover. Whatever work problem besets you, the phone number. I can usually try to help in 3, 5, 10 minutes. I'll give you whatever you need. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And turning to a completely different side of the science perspective, but staying in biology, a plant geneticist. Again, it's something that nobody thinks about. But we all know, you know, we're not talking, I mean, really, the science behind the genetic modified organism activist movement is just totally bogus. Please Google it. You know, this is not me saying it. You know, whether you're looking at Wikipedia, which generally tends to have a liberal bias or whatever, just Google research on genetically modified organisms and you're going to see that this is, you know, it is just a bogus, absolutely bogus enterprise. And no, I do not want to take calls on that. That is just, it's done issue. But it's true. Google it. But the point is that plant genetics are going to enable all kinds of reduced pesticide use. I used to, as a very serious hobby, I was a rose hybridizer. And a big problem in growing roses is they are subject to mildew, downy mildew, black spot, and rust, rose rust, all of which require spraying, all of which are much more likely toxic. And so there is tremendous efforts to breed roses that are genetically immune or at least highly resistant to those diseases. So you don't need to spray constantly. And you believe me, the rose industry is a crop industry like any. There are millions or thousands and thousands of acres that had to be or have to be still sprayed with fungicides and also insecticides. And plant geneticists will come up with varieties that do not need to be sprayed. And no, they're not going to create killer plants. They're going to dominate the world. You know, anything is possible, 1 in 10 billion. But the odds of it are tiny. And, of course, they're tested in very, you know, controlled greenhouses and whatever. So, but my point is that whether it be hunger and certainly genetically modified corn created high protein corn so that the poor people of the world, the people who are living on $2 a day, are able to not starve. And if the GMO people had their way, there would be no high protein corn. But if that's an interest of yours, it has profound implications for improving the world and is an under the radar career. So plant geneticist is wonderful. Now, a little side note. I don't have a PhD in botany. Yes, I have a PhD, but it's more in educational psychology and evaluation of innovation. And yet, as in so many fields, I decided when I first came to California, I've always loved flowers. My father always loved flowers. When I came to California, I was amazed that roses bloomed 9 months out of the year. In New York, it was 2 months out of the year. And I just found those amazing flower, like they're flower factories, a rose bush. And yet I would go down to my local store and I could buy one of these rose bushes for $10 or $5 at the time, and they would last 30 years. That was a miracle. But then I learned about the need to spray them with all kinds of crap. And so I decided to learn on my own how to hybridize roses. And so I simply read. And this, frankly, much of this was, much before the internet. I remember going to the Strybring Arboretum in Golden Gate Park where they have a library. And I remember looking through their horticulture library and the UC Berkeley library. And I found little sections on not only breeding roses, but how to breed healthy roses. And I simply read that little micro niche and became an expert. Then I visited a couple of people who were world-class hybridized, a guy named Harm Seville and a guy named Ralph Moore. I drove down to Salinas. Ralph Moore was that. He was 90 years old at the time, still breeding. And he taught me the mechanics. So between the book reading that I did in the library and watching a master at work and asking questions, and they were always welcome to let me keep calling them, I immediately just in my backyard started breeding roses with no degree at all. And I now have 3 commercial roses on the market. I get a royalty check every year. So my point is that it is very often possible to become a real expert in a field simply by self-study if you pick a micro niche. And you look forward, you look at it, what did I do? I saw a problem that existed. And I said, how can I solve it? Now, I stopped breeding roses 10 years ago because now the big corporations that breed roses are all doing it. They're all breeding for resistance. So they have a scale that's 15 times as large as mine. So my efforts were trivial, but back then they weren't trivial. So there's a lot of lessons in that anecdote. Think about a problem that you see in your life, work life or recreational life, and ask yourself how could you solve it. Could you solve it without getting a PhD? Most people who are rose hybridizers or corn hybridizers or whatever, they do have a PhD in botany. Keith Zary, who's the head of new rose development for Jackson and Perkins, the leading rose company, he's got a PhD in botany. But you know, a lot of his roses, let's just be polite and say, are not great. You can do it if you're bright and, most importantly, if you're driven. The one most missing ingredient that keeps people from being a success is drive, not intelligence. It's not rocket science. This rose breeding thing, it may sound esoteric. It's not. I saw a client yesterday. And he was a pretty bright guy, totally committed ideologically to healthy food. He loves like Revolution Foods, healthier foods in schools, cafeterias, all that kind of stuff. But we've had four sessions now, each a month apart. And every time at the end of each session, we give him a very clear homework assignment, what he wants. This is a guy who'd be very good as the interface between people and operations. He'd be good in a farm supervising farm workers, or in a factory that assembled, for example, those school lunches or whatever. And we've given him very specific homework assignments. And every month he comes back, I didn't really do very much. It's not an intelligence issue. It's not a lack of focus. He had a focus. But most people, I swear, most, I don't know about 90%, but more than 50% of people are dramatically underachieving because of the lack of drive thing. He said crap like, well, things just weren't happening this month. No, things don't just, you have to make things happen. Yes, there's a lot of luck in this world. Absolutely. But doing your part is prerequisite. And then luck's going to do its thing. You're going to, the fickle finger of fate will point at you or away from you. Yes. But stop complaining that it's the system. Yes, the system has its impacts. But there are individuals of all ages, races, genders, sexual orientations, who with not genius intelligence, but with good drive, not obsessive crazy drive necessary, but good drive, manage to make their way in this world. I invite you, I don't know why I feel like saying the word beg you. I feel like begging you to do that, because you will feel so much better about your life. This guy doesn't feel good about his life. He was sheepish and embarrassed to come into my office. He called himself a loser. He is a loser. Even though he's got that perfect niche and he cares a lot about it, and he's not stupid and he's very handsome and he's healthy. He's got the joy of the benefit of youth. Again, I don't mean to sound old, but when you get over 50, you start to say things like, you know, he doesn't realize he's got the greatest gift of all, youth. And he's frittering it away. Please don't fritter it away, whether you're 16 or 76. If you need a little jump start, either a kind jump start or a tough jump start, or you need a practical idea, I invite you to call. The phone number here at work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And some more under-the-radar careers. We are, alas, a world, not just the United States, but a world absolutely filled with political issues and politics, whether they be initiatives here in California or candidates who are running from everything from school board member to president of the United States. And unfortunately, because of the impact of money, which I do decry, in campaigns, you've got ever larger campaign staffs managing the databases, managing the volunteers, managing the messaging, the speech writing, etc. And so, especially here in the Bay Area, which tends to have a very politically concerned listenership and populace in general, getting involved in political campaigns. Yes, you may have to start as a volunteer, but especially if you have some real expertise or could acquire some real expertise. I remember Jim Bruno. He was a guy who was a professor at UCLA, and he was, this is way back in 1980, he developed a computer program that identified the true swing precincts. a way of which were the precincts, voting precincts, that were most going to be worth sending your volunteers to go door to door. Now, that's a nice little niche. So you having those technical expertises, whether it be, you know, in the computer area, or it be in the fundraising pitching area, or the speech writing area, or the overall strategy area, you know, or targeting who, which demographics should you target, etc. You know, if you are one of these people who's very activist oriented, who has a strong set of political beliefs, that could be a way to indeed merge your values with something that is a little under the radar and where the job market is certainly alive and well and alas because of money growing. Phone number here again at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. What's that, the number for a 3-minute workover to help you with your work life? 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello. Hello, it's you.
Hey, I just retired.
Uh-huh.
And I have the ideas for short stories, mm-hmm. but I don't know how to get started.
Okay. The first thing, I'm going to just give you a buffet of things you could do, and you tell me if any of these, if even one, resonates with you. So, first thing you can do is start with a recorder, whether it be a tape recorder or a voice recorder or whatever, and simply tell your story into the recorder. You'll find that in telling it, it's a little easier than to write it, and then do it again and do it again. Keep doing it. Every time you do it, it'll get refined. It'll keep getting altered. Let's stop there. To what extent do you like that idea as a jump starter for your short story writing?
Well, I don't like the sound of my voice, for one, but nonetheless, I think I like just looking at the words. I'd rather just, you know, like do a draft and then just keep editing the draft.
Great. Okay. Well, then if you don't want to audio at first, you can always create an audio, make it a 1 or 2 minute audio, and then transcribe it into words and then do it. Or you can, I mean, I don't do it audio. I mean, I write, you know, I've written 7 books and over 2,000 articles. I've never audioed one in my life. The only time I've used audio was when I was reaching some very complicated part that I couldn't quite make clear in writing. And then I stopped and I recorded into my digital recorder and then I would pretend that I would explain it to a 6-year, like if I was explaining it to a bright 10-year-old, how would I explain it? And that helped me get it clearer. But in general, right, there is, and I like telling stories. So I remember being in the elevator at Tolman Hall at Berkeley, and I, one of the guy who was in the elevator with me was one of my fellow students, and he said that he had an epiphany. His professor, he was stuck with his dissertation. He couldn't get started. And his professor said 2 words, and I can't say one of them on the air, so I'll use a a synonym. His professor just said, write, W-R-I-T-E, crap. He didn't say the word crap, but something, a synonym for that I can't say on the radio. So write crap. So if your watchword is, sit down, do not get up until you're done, and just start from start to finish, and don't put your censor on, just write a crappy first draft just to get the overall story out. The beauty of going from start to finish is it's organic whole. It ends up holding together far better than if you say, I'm going to write the introduction first, and I got this conclusion first. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I like that idea, but where do I go from there? After I have the story, and I've written this stuff,
okay,
who's interested in looking at an unknown writer?
Many. Well, there are dozens of publications, especially online publications, but also print magazines. I'm not in that world, but I think there's one called Z or Zizzy or Zizigy or something like that. But, you know, there's something like the something cart. There are all of these publications, digital and print, that do print short stories, and they are not all from, you know, MacArthur Genius Award winners. So, but the rule is, and even me, who's been so published, when I have an article that's not going in, I write for Psychology Today now and for AOL, but if it's not going in there, if it's not appropriate for those, I will send it to 20, literally, or maybe that's a lie, maybe 10, really. I'll send it to 10 appropriate on-target publications because I know that 8 of them are not going to respond. They may not even read it, or if they read it, they won't like it, or it's the right wrong time. I simply send it, you know, I don't even think about rejection. I just say, okay, which of the 10 that are right for this? And sometimes I don't get it published at all, and then I go on and write my next thing. Or if I don't get it published, I just put it on my blog. And if it does get published, you know, great. But you notice there's no emotional attachment to the rejection. Automatically, I think about 10. Which 10? Okay, I'm going to send these 10, and that's it. Does that feel like something you would do?
Yeah, I'm not worried about rejection either. This is more of a hobby, but I'd like to just kind of give it a shot. So yeah. If I Google, what would I, you know, for the publications, what would I Google?
Yeah, great question. I would just start with short story publications, short story periodicals, short story magazines, short story websites, and put, I'd put short story in quotes so that Google looks at it as a phrase rather than a separate word short and the separate word story. And I'm sure you'll find them. And once you find two, here's a trick. Let's say you find two. And one is the pushcart journal, which is something like what one of them is, and the other is the syzygy, right? You go and you then put those two words in a you put those two words in Google, and then that will usually get you a list of a bunch of them. They may say, you know, I'll give you a whole list of 20 of them. Who knows? And my wonderful engineer, board operator, Joanne Marg, made an additional suggestion, which is great. There are workshops and conferences on short stories and storytelling. So look at Bay Area Short Story Workshop, Bay Area Short Story Course, Bay Area Short Story Festival, Storytelling Festival, and you will meet lots of kindred spirits. And maybe, you know, there are probably our book club, you know, writers clubs that specialize. You could just join a writers club and look, Google writers club and these in your whatever. What city do you live in?
I live in San Francisco.
Great. So, you know, Writers Club San Francisco, and you will probably find one that may even specialize in short stories. And, you know, at least go to one meeting, and you may make friends as well as find leads and get feedback on your writing.
That's great. I'll let you know what happens.
I appreciate that very much. You got to thank Joanne as well. Her ideas were very good. Okay. I wish you the best.
Thank you.
Take care. Let's go right back to the phones. You listen to Work with Marty Nemko. We are doing 3-minute workovers, and in between I am sharing some under-the-radar careers. But let's take another call first before I share another career. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hi, it's you. Hello. Are you there? I guess.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, it's you. Hello?
Oh, hi.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine. What's on your mind?
Oh, great. I'm so sorry.
Okay, no problem.
Excuse me. Hi, I'm Kay. I'm calling from Florida, hoping that you can help me to support and direct my 17-year-old in terms of his years-long search for a career. He's really interested in having a focus before he goes to college, or even if he does not go. He's really bright. He's a self-taught kind of person, pretty much independent of the opinion of others. The only school he likes, the only class he likes in school is really science. Doesn't like that kind of learning a whole lot, but we'll do it if it will result in a business for him that he can operate on his own with some decent money. Any suggestions? Should I take him to career counseling?
Well, let's start with that. You've got a career counselor here who's charging you the right price, zero. The things that you said were independent opinions. So he's an independent minded person. He likes science. You kind of cut out. Did you say he likes science?
Probably the only subject in school that he does like, yeah.
Okay, and he's business-oriented, you say, wants him to start his own business, so that's going to be more of his independence thing. Are those the three ingredients? Now, where in Florida are you?
South Florida.
Okay.
West Palm area.
Okay. There is a college for iconoclastic science-oriented kids called New College, the College of the University of South Florida. Have you heard of New College?
I did look it up years ago, but I don't know much about it.
Okay, it's fantastic. It's actually in Sarasota on the former Ringling Brothers Estates, and it has got
right.
only, I think, a very small number of students, maybe 500 or 1,000, I don't remember. And it was actually designed by I.M. Pei, the iconic ultra-modern architect, and it attracts ultra-modern kind of unusual people amid the palm trees. And it is very science-oriented and very iconoclastic. And it's public, so it's cheap. So it's, to me, one of the hidden treasures. And it happens to, you know, you happen to be in Florida, so I'm mentioning a Florida school. And so you get in-state tuition, and it's certainly worth it. It's not for everybody. It's hard. It is not. Just because it's kind of funky doesn't mean think it's an easy school. It is not.
Right.
It is for very smart kids, and it is not easy to get in. So it's definitely the kind of school that you have to visit and hang out in the dorms, talk to the students, sit in on an early science class, not to an advanced class because they'll get intimidated by its difficulty. But that might be a good starting place. Now, when you say he's got independent opinions, give me an example of a perhaps iconoclastic opinion that he holds.
I meant that he is independent of the opinions of others. In other words, if I, you know, I'm fairly highly educated, if I believe that he should have fabulous grades and he's not particularly interested in that, he's not going to do it.
I love
he's
that.
Independent of the,
I hate grade grubbers. You know that? I'm going to interrupt and do a little riff on this. I just think that so many people are willing to learn crap they don't give a crap about and study hour after hour to learn that stuff, irrelevant, merely for this thing called a grade. I don't have respect for those people. I have respect for people. I don't have respect for lazy people either, to tell you the truth. But people who are saying, I will work hard at what I feel is of value, and they can make a reasonably coherent case, and they're not just saying they're not interested in school just to say it. But if they say, for example, that that understanding 40 geometric theorems seems like a waste of time, and they would rather, for example, understand the biological basis of this thing we call intelligence, fine. Then I will honor that kid as long as he's willing to work hard. So, you know, just the fact that he's not willing to grade grub to me is a plus. And in fact, I think in some ways, having the guts to go and talk when he gets interviewed, and I don't know what they do now at all, but if they interview him at a place like New College, for him to express that iconoclasm, that he has a deep drive to learn, but not just for its own, just not anything, but where it feels of value. Yes, that's a risk, and they may say, to hell with you, man, we need conformists here. But especially at a place like a New College, that might really impress the right interviewer.
Although, that's very true. I mean, that's a great, great perspective. Although his grades may keep him out of that. You know, he's going to probably come out of high school with a B average or something.
So what? That's what he's got to sell. He's got to say, look, it's not like I'm dumb. Look where I have applied myself. Look what I accomplished.
Right.
If he has, if he's just full of it and he hasn't accomplished, that's no good. But if you look at this model rocket I built and I created a model using some calculus to figure out what would be the optimal weight to power ratio and what's the size of the gas tank be. And I was able in my first three rockets crashed, but now I'm on rocket 18 and this one went 243 feet. That guy, I don't care if his grade point average is 2.4, the right school is going to get him in. It's only if he's just kind of hanging out and not showing. It's easy to say, I'm a free thinker. That's garbage. But if he can point to something that shows drive and intelligence, the right, certainly, and he applies to 10 colleges, so, you know, you're not banking on one. But if he applies to 10 colleges for iconoclastic bright kids, he will get into one.
Okay, that's a great idea.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much.
I guess that's why you have a radio show.
Yeah, 25. It'll be 25 years I've been doing this in October, and it's a privilege. I love doing it. So, anyway, I'm glad you listen on the internet, Florida. It's awesome. Feel free to, do me a favor. You don't mind. I actually like it. Call me back when you find, if this idea totally blows up, pardon the rocket, analogy. But if, whatever happens down the road, give me a call. Let us know what turns up, how it turned out.
Thank you so much for your interest. I appreciate that, and I'll do that.
You're most welcome. Take care.
Okay.
Before I go back to the phones, I think I'm going to first let our listeners know, let you know, we are listening to Work with Marty Nemko. I am doing 3-minute workovers and proposing sharing some of my favorite under-the-radar careers. And so before I go back to the phones, I will give out the phone number and share a career. So phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Career that I like. There is an ever larger proportion of GDP that is spent by government, and when government tries to get its ideas, it puts out requests for proposal, whether it be for the Department of Defense or the Department of Health and Human Services or Homeland Security or whatever it is, they put out proposals. And so there is an ever-growing field for proposal writers. And also, by the way, nonprofits, big foundations. You know, I imagine when KALW is trying to expand and try some new innovative program, somebody writes a grant to that foundation saying, we want to, provide an alternative health show here on KALW and we need money to support it and fund it. So they write a grant to the Fleischhacker Foundation or whatever. So there is certainly a need for proposal writers. What a great career for somebody who's creative, who can write. And it's not just sitting in your room in the corner and writing. You are perusing, for example, the Federal Register or different foundations' websites to see what they're looking for. And then you talk to people in your organization. For example, if I were a grant writer for KALW here, I would talk to Matt Martin, the station manager, try to understand what his big priorities are. Let's say there was $50 million that the Rockefeller Foundation was going to be making available for Native American AIDS prevention or whatever it is. I would talk to and I was interested in that, I would talk to different people at KALW to find out the extent to which they're interested in that. And then once I assessed their interest and it was high, and their best ideas, I would amalgamate their best ideas with my own to make it dovetail as well as I could to what this nonprofit foundation is interested in. I'm looking at Joanne Marr right now. She's interested in private prisons. So, you know, she's gotten a Peabody Award for her work she's got awards for big stuff. Anyway, if she wanted to get an additional grant to study some aspect of private prisons, maybe she wanted to go around the country to visit 30 private prisons, she, perhaps on behalf with KALW, whatever, could write a grant to some foundation and get the money. Well, what a wonderful, cool career that is, being a proposal writer. Not everybody's a writer. So that's an under-the-radar career that I think is awesome. Anyway, phone number here, work with Marty Nemko for a three-minute workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And let's go to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hi, it's you.
Marty.
Hi.
I'm having trouble using the internet to find different stuff.
Uh-huh.
I can find a better apartment for one.
Yep.
I want to find a car.
Yep.
It takes me so long just to get everything dialed in to look for this stuff and
yep.
to send an email describing, you know, what kind of tenant I am, et cetera.
Great. Not great, but there's an easy fix. Which is a better idea for you, going to the public library and asking a librarian to help you do it, or finding a friend who will help you do it?
I'm even willing to pay a tutor to help me.
Wonderful.
You know?
So what I would do is I would go to either, you know, I know you don't like the internet, because there are people who are on, for example, a website called taskrabbit.com or on craigslist.org. who list themselves as available for different kinds of things, who can help you, who will both, yes, help you do the specific task, that is, find the better apartment, find the car, but also teach you how to more easily navigate the internet so that down the road you won't need to hire somebody. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. I just want to throw one other small question at you.
Sure.
Marty, how can I use the internet teach me how to learn. Can you kind of expand on that for me?
Great question. I need a little more information. How to learn. What is specific? Is it how to read for better understanding? Is it how to ask questions? Is it how to find a course? What kind of how to learn information do you need?
It's to gather the pertinent information I need for what I'm doing.
Give me an example. I'm going to try to take the challenge of giving you the world's shortest course in learning how to learn. But let's do it in a concrete context. What's one thing you're trying to learn?
How to get a job in my career.
Great.
Like, you know, I'll listen to you a lot, so I can pull down ideas you have, et cetera.
So Google is your greatest friend. So if you simply searched and wrote the words, how to land a job, how to find a job, job searching, job hunting, or even there is a website which allows you, there is a search engine that allows you to ask your question in clear just sentence format like that. How do I find a job? It's called ask.com. You could go, if you Google, you have to kind of come up with search terms. But you might try ask.com and say, how do I find a job? How do I write a resume? How do I write a cover letter? How do I interview? You know,
yes.
That might be the easiest way to get to learn that. Is that a helpful tip or not really?
Yeah, it's helpful. I'm gonna do what you say and get back to you and tell you how it went.
I love that. That is one of my favorite things, is when a caller, you know, I give them some advice and then they call back and they let me know whether it worked or not. That then I can, if it worked, we can celebrate. If it didn't work, I can give you another idea.
Thank you so much, Marty.
I appreciate the call.
Take care.
Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, yeah, you were talking, somebody called you related to publishing. short story.
Right.
So I just want to say that there are literary agents that do that. You know, they scout essentially for new authors.
No, literary agents do not hire short story. Do not. Literary agents will only are looking for book authors, not short stories. And an unpublished somebody who's trying to, for a hobby, write his first short story is not going to get an agent. So that's just not realistic.
My daughter is a literary agent. I don't know if she does that or not, but I can tell you she's always scouting for new authors.
Yes, but they're book authors, and the new authors are ideally people who have either have a long track record of well-published short stories. That giving him and telling him to go find an agent would have not been the best use of his time. But I appreciate your input. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. Hi.
Hello?
Hi.
Yes. I have a comment about your advocating Monsanto.
I'm not going to take that call. Thanks very much for the call. I know there's going to be people who are, against genetic modified organisms, but that's not what this show is about. And I encourage you, rather than have a debate on it, is to Google the term genetically modified organisms research, pros and cons, whatever, and you will see that it really is a manufactured issue. It is one of the many anti-corporate initiatives. But I'm not the biggest fan of corporations in general. When they pollute and try to skirt rules, I despise what they do. But in the case of genetically modified organisms, there were, for example, seven international major bodies, including the National Academy of Sciences, that did massive research on this genetic modified organism thing, and it is bogus. The massive benefits that derive and will derive in the future completely outweigh the minuscule fears of this butterfly that escaped and is going to create this and that. We're not going to go there. But I will give out the phone number again. If you have a career-related problem, I invite you to call for you or someone you love. You've seen in this show we've had some people who are really struggling, like the previous caller, and somebody who is talking about a 17-year-old super bright kid or a retired person. So it doesn't matter what the nature of your problem is. I usually can help. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. And before I even finish that giving out the numbers, the calls are coming in. So can we go to the phones? Yeah, oh, great. We have a caller on the line, so let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Yes, I don't know why you cut me off without even I saying one word.
Okay, because it's off topic, and as I said, this was not it's off topic, and the position is not a defensible position. So let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. Hello?
Hi. Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Okay, so I have a question. I've been struggling with an issue for quite a few years, I would say over 20 years. And so my goal is to earn a living wage, and
sure,
my barrier is poverty. And I've been in this cycle where I go to school and then I drop out because I'm hungry and I can't pay bills. And then I go to work and I get stuck in a rut, and pretty soon I can't pay bills or eat anyway because my wages, they're not high enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I go back to school and I get into that cycle.
Got it. So the school thing, when you are poor, you can't really afford. School is a very long-term project that's expensive, and of course you're not earning income while you're in school. And
mm-hmm.
because we live in an era of, really, we have the most educated population in the world here in the Bay Area. There are plenty of people with bachelor's degrees and master's and PhDs who are driving cabs. So especially when you're poor, it is not usually, everybody's different, but especially given what I'm hearing, it is not a good use of your, not the optimal use of your time and money to be going back to school. So let's come up with what appears to be the kind of work that would make you enough money so that you would get out of poverty and it would still feel somewhat rewarding. So tell me a little bit about who you... What's your first name, by the way?
I really don't want to give it.
Make up a name.
Sarah? Yes.
Okay, Sarah. So, Sarah, tell me about what a little bit about who you are as a person, your strengths, your weaknesses, and what you're interested in.
Okay, so what I'm interested in is developing software. And eventually, I want to own my own software business. So I have to actually get a formal education to be able to do this. And the reason why is because I want to be in control of my financial future. I want to have more, you know, a living wage, but it goes beyond that. So my realistic goal is to earn a living wage. I'm intelligent, I'm bright, I'm a great writer, I have all these skills and talents, but I'm also disabled, so I have some barriers in employment there.
Okay,
so
tell me a little bit about the disability. We'll work with the disability. Tell me about the, what kind of, what, so, in what ways are you disabled?
Well, I have a mobility disability.
Okay.
There's times where I can't walk.
So okay.
Literally can't get to work sometimes.
So you're going to work from home. But you like to write. If I said that you were going to be work from home and do writing and editing from home as a way of getting money, would you think that feels on target or off target?
That would actually be on target. When I retire, I want to write for a living.
Okay. Now, because you say you have an interest in developing software, if I said that you should be a technical writer and that you're not going to have, you don't have the money to go to school to get a certificate or a degree in technical writing, but there have been fabulous books written on technical writing. What if I ask you to read some articles and a couple of books on technical writing and then try to get a job as a technical writer? Because those people don't make 10 or 15 bucks an hour. They make $30 an hour or more.
They don't, but that educational component always comes back to slap me in the face.
In large companies, I'm going to encourage you.
I'm a glass half empty kind of person, but
yep.
I like to be realistic according to my experience.
Nope. Large companies are not going to hire you as a tech writer, absolutely. But small companies who need a documentation, a manual, something, are going to are going to pay somebody $25 an hour. They're not going to hire you $80,000 a year with benefits. But right now, from where you are, given the amalgamation of what you like to do, and you're saying you have mobility issues and it's hard to get to work, because if you're not going to get to work reliably, you're going to lose the job even if you get one. I would argue that your next step...
That's happened at least 3 times in my past.
Got it. So I'm arguing that for now, to get something on your resume at minimum that will make you more...
Well, actually, my resume is fine. My resume, it doesn't have...
I don't mean literally your resume.
Wrong.
I didn't mean that.
Okay.
Have some recent experience for something that's going to pay you reasonably well. That you should try to find a job at a small company, and they're often very happy to have somebody working at home, because then they don't have to give you desk space at home doing some basic technical writing. That is, you say you'd like to be a software developer, so I assume you have some kind of software-related skills. If you,
I don't, and that's why I'm in school.
Well, school is, you've got to acquire a skill set. Either you've either got to write non-technically. There are people who do writing and editing for example, high school students or college students. And if you're going to try to use your existing skill set without having technical expertise, then you need to go that route and perhaps be a tutor. Given that you say, because you will not get hired as a tech writer if you don't, you said your goal was to be a software developer, own your own software business, you know, and make your own living that way. That made me think that you had software expertise. Do you want?
No, I'm at the very beginning of that,
okay.
of that stage.
Do
I'm
you
at the
want?
The very beginning of my goals.
If you are a good, are you right now? I want you to get employed. Because your problem is poverty. I need you to get employed so that you're not worried. I also need you not to interrupt me, because that's also going to hurt you in job interviews. I don't care here, but keeping interrupting me suggests that you do that in job interviews, and that may keep you from getting hired. You may have, so I would encourage you right now, is the best skill or skills that you bring to the table writing and editing? Are you there? Well, I guess she hung up. Okay. You know, if you'll notice, you know, she blamed her problems on externality. She said her problems are poverty. No, poverty is the result of whatever, her lack of drive, her intelligence, her rudeness, whatever. So she was yes, but, and she also had really big dreams that were pretty darn unrealistic. Here was a woman with zero. She doesn't sound like she's a young woman. And she's wants to own her own software development business, when she has no expertise at all in software development. I think, and she's got significant mobility problems. She's been fired 3 times for not showing up at work. So, and yet, when I, you know, ask her to kind of highlight her skills, she's kind of was a little disjointed. You know, it's very easy to externalize responsibility. It's easy to dream big, and I do encourage big dreams, but we also have to start with a baby step. and she wasn't willing, and then she decided she was going to hang up. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nebko. It's your turn on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to call and make a suggestion about the caller who was wondering how to learn.
Yes.
And I live in Berkeley, and we have a wonderful resource, our library here.
Yes, and I mentioned the library to him. That was the first thing I said.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I didn't hear, you know, they also have tutoring in using the computer.
Exactly. That's exactly the first thing I said. That was the first thing out of my mouth. I said, well, do you want to use a friend or do you want to go to the library? Librarians can be really helpful in that regard.
Oh, okay.
So we're on the same page. I appreciate that. Thanks for the call. Let's see if we can get one more call in. Welcome to Work with Marty Nebko. Your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hello.
Hi.
Let me turn down my radio.
Great.
Okay. So this is on behalf of another person. This person, if I can just give you a couple minutes of background.
1 minute of background because we're running up against the clock here.
Okay. This is a person who's been unemployed for some time. Mm-hmm. Let's say 6 months.
Yep.
Before that, military.
Yep.
A couple years. Didn't get a lot of marketable training. Honorable discharge. Mm-hmm. And so I'll just leave it at that. He needs, this is not a self-starter.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a salesman. This is a person who would be perfect, this is no judgment on my part, but it's just a reality, for a civil service, post office type environment, where all direction is provided. If clear direction, almost like a computer, is provided, person will perform.
Okay.
So, this is a person who is, you know, I basically have to find a job for him.
Yep.
So I just wanted to talk out loud if you have some ideas. So far, what my ideas are, low barrier of entry. Nonprofits, like there's something called Grid Alternatives, where you volunteer to put a photovoltaic system on a house. All training is provided.
Nope. Okay, I'm going to stop you there because of the interest of time. My intuition says you were absolutely right in the first thing you said, which was government. That is the last bastion of job security, and whether it be the post office or their, you know, Social Security Administration, there are all these kind of very structured jobs. The guy, he didn't join the military at random. He liked the structure, wants the structure. So I'd be looking in the front of my white pages of my old-fashioned phone book, which lists all the government agencies, and look at all the agencies where you can picture there are a lot of routine jobs. That's why I mentioned Social Security Administration, because or a welfare office, an unemployment office. It's highly structured. They require a lot of people to service the public in that regard, and the post office. And then, right, because when people are not self-motivated, they're going to need you to do it. You sit down with him and you fill out the application with him, not dishonestly, just you sit down with him and coach him and ask him, you know, all the right questions and submit that in. And I think that ultimately, unless he's a great networker, in which case I would encourage him to go to events that are being held, for example, by the Social Service Administration or whatever, where there are public events where he can network with some of the people. Does that make sense?
Yes. When you said not dishonestly, where is the line with that? Because I found that if I just provide everything except you just have to show up. I'm the reference. I can even interview as him over the phone, and that worked once for the for a moving job that lasted for a couple years.
Wait, you interviewed on him? You did a phone interview where you played him?
It was for a temp agency, and that was the only way.
Yeah, you're dealing with the wrong guy here. I like to think the word I use is cosmically. Whenever somebody gets a job, it means somebody else doesn't get the job. So if there was a more worthy, legitimate candidate who didn't lie and didn't have somebody else stand in for him or whatever, and he didn't get the job and this other lesser person gets the job, it's not only unfair to the person who didn't get the job, it's unfair to the boss, it's unfair to the coworkers, and indirectly to the customers. So you're never going to hear me advocate for that.
I'm not advocating.
Right.
When you're in position of almost like a family member.
Doesn't matter. That does not trump the larger cosmic perspective. I got to go. But that is my honest, really heartfelt advice. I invite everyone. I'm not a saint myself. I've done things that are selfish. I'm not 100% of the time honest. But I try to think cosmically. I try where I can to, yes, think globally and act locally. What is going to be best for the world? And I think we could all do worse than thinking that way. Anyway, that's Work with Marty Nebko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute workovers on callers, and I will talk with Linda Lesikowski. She's the author of Fundraising as a Career. Subtitle? I love the subtitle. What? Are you crazy? And she's also co-editor of the Nonprofit Consulting Playbook. It's a collection of writings from 25 leaders in the field. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nebko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.